Welcome to Getting Intimate with CX, brought to you by Brandhook and distributed through the CMO magazine.
Numbers will provide some factual element to a story, but the real insight comes from listening to a customer and putting yourself in their shoes. And that sort of whole human-centered design concept is really predicated on that.
Hi, I'm Pip Stocks, and I'm your host for Getting Intimate with CX, an 11-part series about what makes a great customer experience and how brands in Australia are getting intimate to do that. My guest for this episode is Sarah Damon, who's the Executive Manager of Marketing Insights and Customer Experience. That's a good title, Sarah, big job.
It is, but lots of exciting stuff to do, which is great. Keeps me busy.
You've covered the whole gamut there. Great, welcome. So as people have got the gist now, basically what we're doing is we're asking the same seven questions of everybody. So we'll just kick off. So all right, let's start with the first one. When was the last time you had a great customer experience and which brand was it with?
Look, I'm really impressed with the online claims experience that my health insurer, who happens to be NIB, is currently providing, because they've figured out that a key driver of customer satisfaction isn't just price or features led, it's actually how easy it is to claim. And a lot of providers still don't offer the high cap service where you can claim your healthcare benefit on the spot. And with the NIB app, and no doubt, I'm not 100% certain, but I'm sure other providers offer a similar kind of service, you can take a photo of the documentation, upload it via the app, you receive confirmation email immediately, and a text when the money is paid a few days later. So it's really made what's been previously an incredibly frustrating experience so fantastically simple. Ooh. So a big shout out to the UX team at NIB. Well done.
Maybe you could steal some of those people.
It would be nice if anyone's listening from NIB.
My health insurer, who will remain nameless, has a very complicated process for claiming. I have to still go online and input all the individual claims. So, you know, sometimes you get a receipt of like 10 things if you've been to Pilates or something. I have to input every single one of those. And then sometimes they even ask for the documentation. So it's like, feels like I'm duplicating it.
Well, you might want to send them a link to the NIB website.
It's a very good idea. So is that seamlessness kind of ties in with the second question, what makes a great customer experience? Is that ability to be seamless in your delivery important?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, look, simplicity is a key factor. And at the end of the day, I think it's really got to solve where previously there was a problem. It's also really important to have consistency in that experience, which probably gets into your seamless point, particularly where it's across multiple channels. You know, people don't just use one channel only, one device only. We're using multiple online and offline channels. And the I think the NIB example, using mobile, email, SMS really seamlessly, to your point, is a great example of that.
It still amazes me. And look, I know a lot of it's due to archaic systems in big organisations, but it does still amaze me how, you know, you can go online, but you can't go on your phone, or you can go on the computer, but you can't go here. Like, you know, and or if you do go on your mobile, they don't seem to recognise something that you've did in another device. I mean, I do find that quite astounding.
And look, particularly having worked in superannuation and financial services for a long time, a lot of it is driven by legacy systems, particularly when you're dealing with personalised data. You know, just only a couple of hours ago, I had a chat with my UX consultant. And, you know, he was saying, oh, sometimes when you have the, you know, you have the idea, the difference between the idea and the implementation is, you know, is so challenging because of that integration piece. But I think to some extent that's what I feel, and certainly what he feels, is one of the most rewarding things when you can get, particularly in our organisation that is mid-sized, you can get the right people around the table reasonably quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
And also to understand that there will be some elements of trade-off. There's no point really progressing with something if it's just around the edges,
yeah.
Which is why doing so much research and customer testing is critical beforehand. What we might think is important may not be valued by a member.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of leads us into, you know, why are some brands are able to crack a great customer experience and others aren't. I mean, is it that you are able to be nimble and sit round a table with your team? Is that what makes it so easy for you?
Look, I think the size and structure of the organisation is really important. You know, I at Vic Super, I often say that we're small enough to be agile and create customer solutions reasonably quickly, and large enough to do something meaningful, which is great. There's no doubt that the brands who do customer experience really well are often quite small. Some of these people are, you know, startups. And if they're not, you know, it has been often led by the top, from the CEO and the execs, and sometimes even the board, depending on how progressive they are. And it's often incorporated into the vision and mission. It certainly is in ours, and is often defined as a key measure of success in the organisation.
Yeah.
We're fortunate that we have in our organisation the customer experience as part of our ongoing processes, and have a lot of cross-functional teams that we can pull in reasonably rapidly that are aligned to the one purpose. So it is almost for us entrenched as part of our BAU. I have a user experience consultant as part of my team, but a lot of what we do is integrated into our BAU operations. But I appreciate that for larger organisations that have more larger entrenched business verticals or significant new initiatives, there are a couple of major projects we're working on at the moment, then separate customer experience teams or project teams need to be established outside that BAU.
So you reckon take it out of the business unit and actually give it its focus?
If it's large enough, absolutely. I think, a lot of, you know, mid to larger size businesses are so stretched anyway, just delivering on our business objectives, that it's easy often to say, oh, it's, you know, it's too hard, particularly to the point you mentioned earlier around, okay, well, if you do have to integrate these systems to create a great customer experience, you do need to make sure that you have that consistency of purpose within that team, and that is the driving factor.
Yeah, right.
And you know, you don't let the BAU get in the way.
So you all have to go away and let us do it ourselves.
it would be nice. But we kind of alternate both approaches.
Yeah.
Which is working quite well for us.
But you have to have a leader, I think, that allows you to have that flexibility, don't you? I mean, if you're in a traditional organisation, that wouldn't really work.
Correct. And also have some, and our board have expressed this to us actually, they've given us some license to fail with some ideas reasonably quickly, and not get to a point where we've invested a lot in that. And so what we want to be able to do is have that sense of, and that freedom to be able to throw around and explore what might have been, you know, ideas that we wouldn't have even considered a couple of years ago, to be able to now to expand and create a really good customer experience. So yeah, it's I think having that freedom to think laterally is really, really important,
and deliver a solution that's according to the problem.
Correct. And getting back to my point around not being entrenched in the BAU, which is often very process-driven. And sure, a lot of customer experiences are process-driven, but we just need to take a step back and get into that broader mindset of what could be possible.
So we believe at Brand Talk that customer intimacy is key to delivering a great customer experience, and in fact it is really that only competitive edge these days. I mean, how are you developing your intimacy with your customers?
Look, I think this is something like a website, you never really finished. It's an ongoing journey for us. So we've spent a lot of time over the last 18 months or so looking at our analytics and our data, and working with our data scientists to help understand our members and predict behaviour so we can try and anticipate member needs and certainly get the right solution to the member at the right time. We've also implemented a voice of the customer program, measuring around 5 of our key experiences on a quarterly basis. Sure, it's a lag metric, but it's also a fantastic way for people across the business to get around the table to look at the results and understand what we're doing well and where we need to improve. And we've also created a user experience function, which I mentioned before, in our business. And we're speaking to a lot of customer groups, trial and testing various experiences and understanding what's important and what's not, from the very initial research phase around what their needs are, right through to testing the prototypes. So
it's interesting because we're talking to a lot of people who are saying that if taking all of these metrics and data and having the conversation around those things rather than just reading them in a report, actually having a conversation around what people are telling you seems to be what's working.
That's where I find the gold is, because numbers will tell a story, provide some factual element to a story, but the real insight comes from listening to a customer and putting yourself in their shoes. And that sort of whole human-centered design concept is really predicated on that. In fact, a lot of human-centered design stuff doesn't use a lot of quant data. A lot of it is around, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of the customer. So I think that's where those real gold insights come from. The quant stuff, you absolutely need that too, particularly when you're talking about your current state and future state and really trying to demonstrate the value of it. I think that's where you do need the metrics and so forth as well. But you need a quant and qual approach.
One's context, one's framework and one's context. And I think, you know, again, you kind of need to be able to get granular and big at the same time.
Absolutely.
So you talked about measurement with the board. What is the way that you are measuring your customer intimacy and CX success?
So we've got a mean advocacy rating across our member base from 0 to 10 that's part of our balanced scorecard and reported to the board each quarter. We use mean advocacy because there's less volatility in it as opposed to a net promoter score, particularly around investment markets and so forth, because we found that there was a lot more sensitivity in relation to NPS than mean advocacy. So we have that balanced scorecard. As I mentioned, we've got the metrics from our Voice of the Customer program. We've had that in place now 2 years, so it's really nice to see that trend. It takes a while to see how we are trending and what are the elements that can contribute to scores going up and down. So that's been really valuable for us, and that's included in the executives' KPIs and also the managers' KPIs well. And we also look at the change in member behaviour, member engagement through various metrics. And how this links to more commercial outcomes in our business. Even though we're a profit-to-member fund, we want to make sure that we're growing the fund so the members get the benefit. And so whether that be from increased membership growth, any changes we make to the changes we make to the welcome join experience, for example, any improved retention, increased number of roll-ins and so forth. So we're really trying where we can to be able to put those measurements behind it. It's also been a good exercise for our board as well to go on that journey with us, because a lot of these sorts of things, particularly around CX, in the main are going to be lag metrics, so you won't really know for a year or potentially more the true impact that these sorts of experiences are having.
But I think if it's on their scorecard or, you know, part of a board's KPIs, for example, then they have to have the conversation around a customer.
Absolutely. I've always been a big advocate if you want people to take accountability for it and also to take an interest in it, you put it in their dashboard or their KPIs.
Yeah, I'm totally into that as well. All right, last two questions. What new technology or trend are you most excited about when it comes to your brand's customer experience?
Gosh, there's so much and it's moving so fast. Every morning I go through my emails and it seems that there's some new thing out there. So trawling through that is actually, and working out the wheat from the chaff is a task in itself, which is why it's really important to have a really clear strategy. But what we're really trying to leverage at the moment is our marketing automation capability and our new content management system capabilities to create more journey maps that are automated and aligned to specific personas. So we think that that's going to help us create more relevant customer experiences and better business outcomes, and also give us more efficiencies moving forward because it will be automated. And I'm really interested in the resurgence of web chat.
I love web chat.
It's been around for a long time, but I was in the States last year and was really impressed with how widely online chat is used, a lot more than here. And I think you'll see the chatbot capability really improve over the next couple of years with, you know, much stronger algorithms underpinning it, particularly with the larger banks. I don't think as an organisation we're large enough for automated chatbots, but I believe there is a place for us with in specific experiences for web chat as an alternate channel.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't stop people getting, because when you do ring or when you do actually go online, usually it's because you want to find a solution quickly. So as long as it enables that and doesn't, puts another barrier up, you know, I think I had to ring one of the utilities the other day and I went through, you know, 9 different numbers and 75 different variations of that. And, you know, as you know, everyone gets frustrated. So the bot can't be another one of those. It has to actually solve problems.
Completely agree. And I don't think you can say, well, it's going to be the most cost-efficient channel for us, so therefore we're sticking it here.
Yeah, that's right.
It's really got to be the right fit.
Yeah.
So we're certainly thinking about it to help members work through things like online calculators and so forth as more of an enabler rather than, to your point, it's going to be a very limited experience or put up another barrier.
Yeah,
absolutely.
A lot of brands are thinking about them as a way of reducing costs in call centres, and I think that's a really bad way to think about it.
Look, I agree. I think I know that there are a few, there's a particular airline that's using it at the moment that, and I think my experience with it has been probably suboptimal.
Yeah.
But I think they are getting more sophisticated. There's also voice analytics and so forth that can be linked in with a lot of this. So I think it's something to really watch over the course of the next couple of years. But it gets back to a point of it's got to be the right fit.
Yeah,
it has to be the right fit.
I totally agree. All right, your last question. This is exciting, isn't it? I've had typical bloody marketers change this question on me. But anyway, you might not be a changing question person, Sarah. If you had a magic wand, what would be the one thing you'd change about your customer experience?
I had to think long and hard about this one.
Too many things?
Too many things, and it's, I guess it's really, you have to sort of really say, right, what's the most critical thing?
Yeah.
But the one that really stood out for me is that, you know, the current trend and future trends are that, you know, people are becoming a lot more transient in the workforce, right? The days of staying in a job for 30 years are well and truly over. And the millennials, you know, it's common knowledge, you know, it's common practice to spend a year or two here and there and then change career completely or be a consultant and then come back into the workforce. So much more transient. And so keeping in touch with in contact with our customers and having them take us with them as they change jobs is critical. You know, it takes so much time to acquire a member. We really need to ensure that we are really smart about how they can take us with them. So we'd love to have stronger links with the employers their current employer, their previous and the future employer before they change jobs, so we can make them, they can make that move from one employer to the next really seamlessly.
Mm.
And I think it's a challenge that the whole industry faces as well. We're very highly regulated as well, so
well,
that doesn't help.
I think that the, you know, even just talking about what we know other people are doing, when your life isn't about a full-time job and you're a business owner or you're a consultant, and you know, and also the trend of the consumer being in control, how do you enable that person to not just keep you informed about their changes, but also make sure that they're not losing out in that journey?
Absolutely. And look, the one thing that I would love to get more traction on, and we're doing a lot of exciting work in this area at the moment, and I think this is something that the industry is going to get a lot better at in the future, is making it more real for members. Superannuation is something you can't see, can't touch, it's a number, either number on a page, and it's also into the future. So it makes it really difficult to connect. So I think there's going to be some interesting things that I know we're doing and that the industry will be doing into the future to really help people connect and take ownership and track more effectively and make changes to and really use their superannuation as that really important asset.
Yeah.
Rather than just something that, you know, sits on the dining room table for gathering dust until the next statement run comes in.
I don't think many people, well, I don't know, I'm not great knowing what my balance is. Anyway, I shouldn't be talking to you about that because I am a Vic Super customer.
I can tell you later on.
Maybe you can tell me. Well, brilliant. Thanks, Sarah. That was really good. We've had some amazing feedback from people, really similar themes, lots of C words coming out. So I think, you know, we're going to summarise all of this and hopefully put some events together that really bring this to life for our audience.
Hope it's the right C word.
Yeah, we don't say that on the CMO Magazine distributed podcast. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week with another great episode. Thanks, Sarah.